Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Has anyone got anything to plug this week?
Yeah, my book's been nominated for an award.
Whoa!
Welcome to the Box Set Pod. This week brought to you by Marsha's book, which has been nominated for an award. What award's that, Marsha?
Chortle Award for Books. So Chortle have like a big... Chortle's a comedy website.
Never heard of it.
They're the biggest comedy website in the UK, and they have awards every year, and they have an award for best book, and in it, in the nominations are Limmy's book, Bridget Christie's book, Standard Issue magazine, which they decided to include, which is Sarah Millican's magazine, online magazine that she set up, and my book, me and Deborah Francis White's book, Off the Mic.
Wow,
that's really good.
Well done. And what's your website?
Yeah, if you go to yesyesmarsha.com/off-the-mic. Then you can find out about the book and you can vote.
Great, you can vote there. So vote, because otherwise, well, let's face it, Limmy's won it, hasn't he?
No, what, if Limmy wins?
What?
No, I don't think... If Limmy wins...
Bridget Christie will win it.
No,
well, yeah, but it's based on votes.
It's based on votes, so I think Standard Issue magazine will, because Sarah Millican has a lot of followers, and also because there's so many people who write for Standard Issue, and
what
I feel like they'll be...
What a stupid idea to give the general public a vote in these things.
Oh, yeah, it's ridiculous.
Isn't it stupid? It's like when me and Jamie were nominated for Best Newcomer Award at the Sony Radio Academy Awards 2009, and we were up against Kelly Osbourne.
Kelly Osbourne. Yeah.
I mean, for fuck's sake.
That was one of the proudest moments of my former career.
Yeah, of us being nominated. Well, it happened once. Welcome to the Box Set Pod, then. So tonight we're going to deal with Utopia. We're going to be talking about Utopia in a bit. Marsha's been banging on about it for ages. I have watched episode one. Christian has watched episode one. Jamie has watched none. And Matt has watched how much?
None.
No! So, really, Marsha is going to be... Marsha is the only one to have the full Beyond episode four. It's going to be her job to persuade us to get to the all-important fourth episode of Utopia.
You know what? I watched 10 minutes of it.
10 minutes? Oh, Jesus,
a couple of years ago.
So lame. 2 years ago? Is it that old?
Yeah,
it's pretty old, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty old.
Oh, I thought this was a new thing. Everyone's going berserk about it.
No, started a couple of years ago. I think it just finished quite recently.
I see, right. That'd be why everyone was going on about it. We've also got your chart and the usual other stuff. Now then, maybe today is the day that everyone who's left listening to this podcast loses faith in my taste. Because I've certainly challenged that, but... I am clearly in the minority on all of my opinions at the moment. I can't help thinking that the world is going mad. Maybe this is something to do with getting old. We'll find out from Christian shortly. And Zoolander, okay? Zoolander 2.
Yeah.
And also, can I just say, you know, TV, normal terrestrial TV has got this challenge to create event TV at the moment. Yeah. And I watched Grease Live last week. Did anyone watch this?
No.
Grease live.
They did in America. They did Grease the musical, but live from Burbank Studios, and it was so complex. They rehearsed it for like a year. They had loads of different sound stages, and the actors had to be driven on golf buggies between sets, and they did the whole musical live.
Jesus Christ! What a waste of time.
Yeah.
It was brilliant, and it was a perfect example of how normal TV can compete with the box set world, because it was just phenomenal. Like, you forget how good, you know, people who are actors, dancers, singers, those triple threat people who are supremely talented, when you see them doing like high octane, proper, what's it called? dance. What's the dance style that Greece is in?
You swing.
Know, hand jive and all that. Swing, dancing. And the way that they played to the fact that it was live, like they used old, sometimes they would use old cameras that were part of the set, but you would see through the actual old cameras. And it was just so clever and brilliant, and everything a cheesy musical should be. It shed me a tear or two. At the end, partly because you're just going, oh my god, this is so, how have they done it, and what a sense of achievement for them. And Bonk from The Wire was in it as well.
What? So, Bonk?
Yeah. Right, it's won me over now.
Singing and dancing. It was still Grease the musical. So there we go. My taste in question already. And then I decided that I would go and watch Zoolander 2. Despite the fact that universally
has
been absolutely panned.
Quick question. What did you think of Zoolander 1? Are you a fan?
Well, when Zoolander 1 came along, has anyone else watched Zoolander 2, by the way?
No. But I love Zoolander 1. It's one
right.
of my favourites.
I liked Zoolander 1.
I think we struggled with Zoolander 1, or the world did, because it was the first time that Ben Stiller didn't play us. He didn't play the protagonist that was kind of surrounded by ludicrous characters. He was the one who was ludicrous and so stupid and all of that, that I think I struggled with it the first time. And then I watched it again a couple of weeks ago, Zoolander 1, and just went, oh, this is so good. It's clearly so good. And then the reviews came out for Zoolander 2. I will read some random...
22% on Rotten Tomatoes.
22%. Right. Some people find Eric Zoolander funny and likeable and endearingly dumb. I don't. I find him grating. Zoolander 2 sweats its silly ass off to please. The results are scattershot. Cramp it. It's just endless. Like, if you go through the Rotten Tomatoes reviews, it is endless green tomatoes and very few red. And imagine how happy I was after 2 days of looking through these reviews when I saw that the two reviews that gave it 3 stars, so still not 5, were Helen O'Hara and Ollie Richards, who both have been on this podcast talking about films. Now, I went to watch it, bearing in mind that, you know, I thought, I was prepared for the worst, and when we came out, I felt so moved to record something for this podcast that I did. This is how we're reporting for the Box Set Pod. I'm here with my wife, Sarah, and we're just walking out of Zoolander 2. And I want to start by saying, Rotten Tomatoes, what are we going to do about the reviews of comedies? Because it's got stinking reviews from both users and critics. And it was absolutely fucking hilarious. What did you think, wife?
That we're in the cinema and there's lots of people around and I'm quite shy. I don't want to speak into your thing.
Come on. What did you think? Did you enjoy it?
I think if you like the first one, you'll like the second
exactly.
one.
Exactly. Like, if you watch the first one a week ago and then you watch this... It's a perfect follow-on from the first one. The first one jumped around and made no sense. That was part of the point. It's a fickle world. It's a fickle plot. Fickle characters.
Kristen Wiig is really good. I really like her.
Kristen Wiig's good. Everybody's good. Will Ferrell's good. Everyone takes it really seriously. They set up their world and then they take it seriously. And what is wrong with people? What is wrong with critics who can watch this stuff and not see that every joke, every line has been thought about, has been worked on? Like, there's been some real pride taken over the making of this thing. And okay, so it's harder to make people laugh. So it's more subjective comedy, perhaps. But what the hell did they expect?
No, you don't laugh all the way through it, but you didn't laugh all the way through the first one either. I don't know.
Yes. I did
it's
laugh.
It's not amazing. It's not amazing.
I think
it's good
is.
Fun. It's good fun.
I think it's brilliant for exactly what it is. It's I'm amazed that people thought that stuff up. For example, at one point Owen Wilson becomes travels by crouching in a position on the top of a helicopter blade, right? Now, okay, so a critic can watch that and go, yeah, whatever. But someone thought that up. It's hard to think that shit up. It's silly comedy. And it's difficult.
We've been waiting over a decade for it, so the expectations are high. It's always hard to live up to that, isn't it?
Did they even enjoy the first one? Because I don't know.
Well, like, the first one wasn't the first one a massive flop, but but then it got cult reviews afterwards. People found it. It didn't make very much money at the box office.
Well, I hope that exactly the same thing happens here, because I feel sorry for the very, very rich people who star in this film and who made it.
No, this is the opposite, that everyone's expecting it to be brilliant and it's going to make a fortune, but it's not going to be as well liked because people didn't find it themselves.
But the cinema was empty. It was a Saturday night. There was about five people in
there.
We
went at 6 o'clock.
Yeah, we did, but still, I think it's going to flop big time, and it deserves a third. There should be a third. This is disgraceful. Anyway, brilliant Zoolander.
That's what I think of Zoolander.
Now, the thing about Zoolander, I think, is it's one of those films, a bit like the Brady Bunch movie, and like certain TV shows as well, where if you don't find it funny, you're never going to find it funny. And if you find it funny, the more times you watch it, the funnier you'll find it.
Yeah.
And I think you're right. I think the first one did flop. And so then I feel like it's sort of the legend of it, of Magnum and Blue Steel, has lived on, and that's why. But actually, I'm sure all those people who panned it would have panned the first one too.
I genuinely, you know, the night after we watched Magic Mike Extra Extra Large, which we've never watched, and I thoroughly enjoyed Magic Mike the first one because it had a certain reality whilst also being knowingly gratuitous, you know. And this is one of the worst films I've ever seen, Magic Mike Extra Extra Large. And if you look up the reviews of that on Rotten Tomatoes...
People loved it!
They fucking loved it. And it's so boring. Like, so boring. It's 2 hours, and it's just boring as hell. And it just makes me go, what is going on with these groups of critics when they sit in these screening trailers? These screening testers, and they sit with their notepad and stuff.
Do you know what it is, Hal?
Yes, Christian.
It's those down in London. That's who it is.
It is, you know.
It's all those ones down in London.
I actually think that there is some truth to that, that if you get a group of critics together with a pen and pad, but how can you lack the imagination? The first scene of Zoolander is Justin Bieber. I'm not giving anything away. It happens immediately. It's the first scene. They've talked about it on Jimmy Fallon and all sorts. Justin Bieber is in a high-speed chase. He's running and he's being chased by 3 motorbikes in the streets of Rome at night. And it's worthy of... Like, this film is so well-made, it's worthy of Bourne Identity or something. He's running through the streets. It's high-action.
Oh, Jesus,
stuff.
I was lost the plot already.
It's true. It's true. It's so... Ben Stiller has directed this thing and it is slick as anything. It's brilliant. And Justin Bieber gets gunned down, right, with a machine gun as he's banging on Sting's door asking him for help.
Oh, I like this already.
So he's banging on Sting's door going, Sting, it's Bieber, let me in. He gets machine gunned to death, and with his last breath, he reaches into his pocket, gets his phone, and takes a selfie of him doing Blue Steel, the face. And that's the setup of the film. It's like, why are celebrities being killed and pulling the Zoolander face? And it is genuinely brilliant. I loved it because I'm trying to write a comedy at the moment with someone, and I know what it's like to pore over every line and to try and make it funny. And they have put so much love and attention into this film that I genuinely think Ben Stiller must be just suicidal. Just at least wringing his hands and going, how can so many critics just not get it?
Are you now going to go and put a load of people doing silly faces into your script?
No. No, and
get a bunch of celebrities all doing the same silly face and put it in your script. That's good.
And so, did you like Zoolander, Matt?
I've never seen it, but I'm
right.
Not
shut the fuck up. This is the voice of the London critics that we can hear here. Listen to these practical Londoners. They're like, what? If the tube's 5 minutes late, this is a disgrace.
Can I tell you my favourite thing about your little sound clip there?
Yeah, go on.
It was, what do you think, wife?
What do you think, wife?
What do you think, wife? You sound like a character in a fairy tale.
I think I'd agree with you about the critics, but because I do it on the whole thing that they get it wrong when it comes to comedy. But I think the problem is that the audience is giving it a bad review as well, like not just the, which makes me think, well, a
you're
lot
probably just
of
wrong,
people can't be, everybody can't be wrong, you know.
It, well,
you do find a lot of films, critics get it wrong, and you know they'll rate something really low, and the audience will love it, but you know it's not getting great reviews.
Again,
people.
All I ask is that you watch the first one, and then you go and watch this, and tell me that it's not better, if not at least the same quality as the first one. It's the same world. It just perfectly follows on. And yeah, all right, some gags miss and stuff, but that's true of all comedy. That's true of all Will Ferrell's comedies. And you know, some gags don't quite hit. But even just the idea of the gag is funny in itself. Like, I'm sat there at least chuckling, and it's better than 9 out of 10 films that I go and watch at the cinema.
You know, I've been thinking about a theory recently that of the last year, I think female comedies have been my favourite comedies of the round of the last year. There's been Trainwreck, Amy Schumer comedy. I thought that was brilliant. Right. Yeah. Sisters with Tina Fey. Yeah, and
I enjoyed that.
Yeah, I thought it was really good. I really like the Pitch Perfect film. I think, what's her name? What's the fat girl?
Anna
name?
Kendrick.
Rebel Wilson.
Did you see her at the BAFTAs? She was so funny at the BAFTAs. She wrote this speech. She's got a YouTube. And she's brilliant in the Pitch Perfect. I think like female comedies at the moment have never been better. And I think they're doing better than men at the moment. The comedy game.
With their vaginas getting in the way.
Yeah.
I know, despite falling over their boobs and their high heels.
I just wish we lived in a world where we didn't have to say female comedies and we just said comedies.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
And while we're on sexism, this is the first chance we've had to hold Christian Talbot to task. Christian.
Oh my God, what did you do to Chelsea Peretti?
Oh, Christian was talking about Brooklyn Nine-Nine a couple of weeks ago, and he said, to quote, "I really like the one lady who is the older lady in the office who wears a cardigan and hangs out, and it's Chelsea Peretti, who is probably the youngest in the cast."
Oh my God! Well, she looks all, just the character that she plays.
She's basically the ugliest member of the cast, and you had the old lady in the cardigan.
I said older, I'm pretty sure. I didn't say the old lady.
We'll have to check that.
That's terrible. She's the funniest.
Yeah, she is the funniest. Yeah.
I would say she's the most attractive in the cast.
Yes, I know you would, because
Santiago's the most attractive.
Yeah, Santiago's gorgeous.
She's boring.
I don't know. She smokes.
Have you guys held on to this until I came back to the pod? Have you guys?
I could not wait. We mentioned it last week. We ridiculed you on last week's podcast.
Oh my God!
Which is good indication.
Yeah, we tore you to pieces on last week's one. We said some terrible things about you.
Absolutely awful. It's very important that you keep up with the podcast.
Jesus, I haven't had time to listen. I'm going to have to listen to it now.
I know. There's probably a slander suit in there somewhere. So anyway, there we go. So I urge you all to go and watch Zoolander 2 with an open heart and an open mind. And I agree with you, Jamie. This is why I was so destroyed. Was like, it's general human beings that have been giving it this bad review as well as critics. And yeah, very upsetting. Anyway, let's get on to Utopia after we check in with this week's chart this week. And Ben can't be with us tonight, but he has sent the chart. This is the top 10 box sets from both legal and illegal downloads around the world, so depending on which country you're in. Have you got the chart there, Jamie?
Yep, indeed.
Okay, what have we got?
At number 10, Good Wife.
Going strong.
Yeah, later series is a bit naff. Number 9, Endeavour, the Inspector Morse prequel. Cool. And number 8, Better Call Saul, which is out on the day we record this. The first episode is on Netflix tonight.
I should be watching it right now.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
And number 7, Outlander. This is big in the States. One of us should probably watch it, really.
Marsha can watch it because she's nearest the States.
What's it about?
I don't know. Someone who's out.
Isn't that the one about time travel or something?
Yeah, something like that. Ben mentioned it last week.
I'll look it up.
Yeah. Next.
Yeah, at number 6, Big Bang Theory. At number 5, X-Files. Ben says he's still on season 23. He hasn't seen the new ones yet.
Has anybody seen the new ones?
Yeah, you have. You slagged it off, didn't you?
Oh my God, it's so dreadful. I've still kept watching it just out of badness. I've just kept watching it because it's so bad. and just, you know, just to annoy everybody else in the room.
Oh, dear. And number four, War and Peace. And he says yawn. I've not watched War and Peace, but it's getting quite high ratings. It's getting like 8 to 10 million people watching it.
I wouldn't pay any attention to the fucking critics, so carry on.
There you go. Walking Dead. Walking Dead's at number three. It's back. Broadcast in the US Sunday nights on AMC, and it's available to buy and broadcast internationally the next day.
I'm going to watch it tonight.
And number two, Happy Valley. It's big in the UK. And Ben says he actually enjoyed the first episode. So
hell is Happy Valley?
No, Ben hated it.
No,
Ben...
he says he enjoyed it. He's watched the first episode and he enjoyed it.
Oh, I thought he hated it. Happy Valley's the one set in the north with Sarah Lancaster playing a policewoman. Oh, it's grim up north.
Yeah. Oh, no, he didn't like that. He talked about that last week.
Yeah, he slagged it off last week, but he's...
Yeah, well, clearly he hadn't watched it when he slagged it off. And actually, now he's tried watching it, he's gone, oh, it's quite good. And number one, it's Downton Abbey. Every single sales charts getting 10 million viewers in the US because it's the final season.
One more statement / point / question. Big Bang Theory was in there. I watched it the other night, and I know I'm probably late to the party here, Christian, but it occurred to me, having watched Zoolander... I've been trying to analyse what the hell went wrong. Big Bang Theory and a lot of the comedies we have today, all of the jokes are sarcasm. Pretty much every joke. And when it's not sarcasm, it really stands out and it's especially funny on the Big Bang Theory. But we really do rely on sarcasm, on somebody going, yeah, well, you would say that, like the time you fell down the stairs and kissed your dad. You know, it's kind of always... sarcasm. And Zoolander and Silly Things stand out so much, and when you watch Python again it stands out so much because there seems to be so little surreal and brave stuff. And I wonder, especially when you look at that top 10, at the things that people are watching, so many boring fucking things. It's almost like it's the 50s again and we're in this rut of conservative television and comedy.
Hell, here's the thing you can do, right? On Facebook a couple of weeks ago, somebody had posted up a clip. I'm not sure if we talked about this before. A clip of the Big Bang Theory. And it was like a 3-minute clip. And they had taken out all of the audience reaction. So there was no laugh track and there was no applause or anything like that. And if you listen to it, if you just listen to it without that, it's appalling. It's just sad. There's no jokes. Mm. It's just really, really sad. But conversely, if you watch something like Modern Family, I wasn't a really big fan of Modern.
I love Modern Family.
I started watching it at the house here. My daughter watches it, and is a big fan. So I started watching it again, and I thought, I'm not going to like this. But Modern Family doesn't have a laugh track, and it's actually really very funny.
Yeah.
It doesn't need a laugh track on it, and you can, and it exposes whether the writing is any, whether the, you know, the writing is any good or not.
Well, Brooklyn Nine-Nine is the same, I think, and that's why you need to stick with it. Did you get any further with Brooklyn Nine-Nine?
I haven't had a chance. I've been away, so
I haven't had a chance, but I will do.
I'm going to give it more of a chance.
Yeah.
I can't watch comedies with a laugh track now. I can't do it.
Really?
Yeah, I really can't. I can't stand it.
Well, Frasier still stands up, though. Oh,
well, no, yeah, but anything from vintage comedy, that Cheers, Frasier, Dad's Army, whatever, kind of thing, Blackadder, those are all fine. Mm. But anything that's been made after about, I guess, 2000, I can't do it.
But I think sometimes with a laugh track, like the IT Crowd is one of my favourite TV shows, and sometimes with the laugh track, the pleasure is like... what, like listening to the audience get the joke, or when there's something coming. I feel like the IT Crowd is one of these shows where often there's a joke happening and you know exactly what's coming, but you still take pleasure in it when it happens. And so hearing that kind of audience, like the build-up of the laugh and then the explosion when it comes.
Well, I think they paste in. I've got a feeling they beef up the laughs and paste stuff in. And I think that's the difference between 2000 or whatever arbitrary barrier Matt has made up in his head there. I think that there is a...
Just pulled it out of thin air. Yeah. I didn't act like it was researched.
There's a genuine...
I don't think they do. beef them up.
Well, I mean, I think they do. They definitely it's pretty do. Well known that they do, Marsha.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
But whereas they don't with the IT crowd. The IT crowd, and Graham Linehan has always said this, is that the laugh track that you hear on that is the actual audience.
Yeah. And it's that thing, I think, as well, of the warm-up act of, in those big American shows, they need a laugh every 6 seconds. You know, they have these rules and they whip the audience up into such a frenzy beforehand. Whereas with Frasier and with the IT crowd and stuff, you get a sense of a different nuance in the different laughs, depending on the jokes.
Yeah, yeah. But I think that's also the thing, is just, and actually I saw this in one of the extras on the IT crowd, and I think it's that it's so exciting when you're there. Like when you're watching, it's like when you watch something in the cinema, you're more likely to laugh louder than you are if you're like alone on your couch.
Yeah.
And then particularly if you're watching something live, you are in this kind of heightened state of excitement. And so you're more likely to laugh louder at things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I think that is true. But they'd certainly certainly put a big business into whipping the audience up, I think, and making sure that it's, which I presume they didn't do in Cheers and stuff. It was kind of, everyone was
probably
pissed.
I think they did.
Yeah, I think they just gave them booze.
Does anyone like The Big Bang Theory?
Yeah, I mean, I can watch it. I can watch it, and sometimes a joke happens and it's truly brilliant. You know, I think you've got some of the best writers on there, but there's just so many gags that a lot of it relies on sarcasm. I wouldn't choose to sit and watch it if that's what you're asking, Matt.
No, okay.
But if it's on, I can laugh at it.
Yeah, it was a lot better. I think the quality of it has, it's kind of jumped the shark, I think.
Okay, Utopia. Or Jamie, do you want to do some news?
News.
Jamie?
I can do news, yeah.
You all right? Did you fall asleep? You're making your tea?
No. I was just checking something with tea tonight.
Yeah. That'll be about the tea.
Let me just say this as well. I want to slag off teaser trailers for a second, because the latest Game of Thrones teaser trailer is out. I'm like, it does nothing. It tells you nothing. I'm like, I'm sick of, I like trailers. Like, I like seeing a trailer or something. What, a teaser, like a 30 to a minute long trailer that is just, it just gives you absolutely nothing. It just tries to play with your heart.
Conversely, at the cinema at the moment, there's a lot of movie trailers that tell you the whole film. The whole film, every beat of the film they've put in this kind of, well, this is aimed at women who are going to enjoy this romantic comedy, and they need to know that it is the exact same romantic comedy plot that they've seen in Jerry Maguire and everything else, and therefore we'll show them everything, and they'll come and they'll sit down like they watch fucking Magic Mike, and they'll feast on it, you know. So at the other end of the scale, stupid as well.
Yeah, I see your point. To the news now. Dr. Dre is to star in the first TV drama from Apple Studios.
Mm-hmm.
It's been announced. It's called Vital Signs. It's a 6-part drama. Dr. Dre starring in it. It's going to be about a character who's suffering from different emotional experiences, and I don't know, it's quite weird at the moment. Every episode's going to be a different emotional experience, apparently, and I'm imagining it's going to have a pretty good soundtrack with Dr. Dre involved, plus Sam Rockwell's involved, and he's a brilliant actor.
Wow.
Hang on, is Dr. Dre in the show?
He's in it and he's producing it.
Wow.
Do we know how good an actor Dr. Dre is?
Have you seen the film Training Day?
Yeah.
Yeah,
he's in that. He gets punched by Ethan Hawke. He's one of the.
Is he in it for about 30 seconds?
Maybe about 5 minutes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he's not that great in it. He plays a hard man, and he's all right at that. But
by the way, white people, did anyone watch Straight Outta Compton? Oh my God, one of the films of the year. That amazing film.
Can I say something? Do you think when they were signing the deal, you know, Apple were buying Beats? Or whatever, did that, and it was like, yeah, there's one condition. I want my own show.
Yeah, probably.
In other news, Daniel Craig's been reported to officially be quitting as James Bond, which, if you watch the latest James Bond, you can kind of understand why it feels like he's quitting in the film. Like, I felt like he was quitting, and not like he was bad, but like it feels like a quit film. And the rumour is he's taking a new role in a TV drama called Purity. It's it's looking quite good. It's about a young woman raised in unusual circumstances in Northern Carolina. But basically, there's a couple of big companies bidding for it. Showtime, FX, Netflix want it. And the bookies have slashed odds on James Norton from War and Peace. If you don't know who he is, Google him now. He might be the new Bond. Wow. So James Norton from War and Peace.
Tom Hardy?
No, apparently not. Oh,
thank God for that. Bloody Tom Hardy.
Oh, God, how you're a mess.
Oh, Matt, I knew you'd like him.
You need to watch Mad Max, Howell. You need to watch Mad Max.
Oh, you know what? I watched Mad Max on Saturday, and I fucking hated it.
You know what? You needed to watch it in a cinema because it's...
Yeah, I completely agree.
Same
I completely
with
agree.
Magic Mike XXL.
Lastly, on the website, boxsetpod.com/news, is Will Arnett's new TV comedy trailer for Netflix. It looks quite good. He plays a self-help guru. He's a bit of an arsehole, apparently, isn't he? But it looks really interesting, and I like Will Arnett. So,
okay. Thank you, Jamie, for that wonderful news. Now let's get on to Batman.
That was my impression of...
we got Bane.
Bane. Utopia. I watched it, the first episode, last night. Marsha's been banging on about it for ages. Christian, let's ask you to do the synopsis before you and me tell Marsha what we thought of it. What is the setup?
The setup is that there's... it starts off with a scene in a comic shop, and these two guys walk in and start asking where a person is, asking the guy who runs the comic shop where is... I can't remember the name now.
Jessica Hyde.
Where is Jessica Hyde? And the guy doesn't know, and they just end up like gassing everybody. I'm giving this away, actually. Sorry, gassing everybody in the comic shop.
First scene.
And so there's one... I'm trying to remember now.
It's a really hard pilot to describe plot.
It is kind of. There's one kid left. There's a kid left. Was he in the comic shop? The kid?
No, they killed the kid as well.
God, it is hard to describe.
I'm just going to leave the room for 2 minutes because I need to grab a charger for my laptop. But I think that will give you long enough to figure out what Utopia is about.
Okay. There's another guy working for the Department of Health. I think a politician guy, and he's being blackmailed into getting another minister to sign off on drugs. To be bought in. What else?
Can I prompt you?
It's really difficult, you know.
It is. What do they all have in common, a lot of the people in the show?
And they're all on a they're all part of like a forum, an online forum for a comic book nerds, no?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
A graphic novel.
For this one graphic novel. It is very difficult. I did watch this. I'll tell you what happened. I watched the first 40 minutes of it, and then I had to switch it off because I was terrified. I only watched the last 20 minutes literally before I went to do this podcast.
I'm back. So you got as far as the torture, did you?
I got as far... Oh, we've discussed this, haven't we? We have talked to you about this before. Yeah, I got as far as the torture, and then... I had to switch it off because my stomach was in knots. I found that really disturbing.
Let
me read the synopsis of Utopia on IMDb. Because
does this mean I can cut all of Christian's bit out and just cut to you?
Yeah, probably.
No, I'd keep that in. It was interesting. After a group of people who meet online discover a bizarre graphic novel which seems to hold mysterious answers, they find themselves being tracked down by a merciless organisation known merely as the Network.
Well, we don't even know that much, to be honest.
Mine was better than that.
So,
Can I just ask, would it be spoilerific to talk about this torture scene? Because I'm just curious as to why it's so
it's just blood-curdling. Torture. It's just torture, and it's to do with...
It's not any specific one thing.
Yes, it's specifically to do with the eyes.
Oh, yep. That's not good. Mm.
Can I say, in defence of this,
why are you defending it? We haven't even said anything critical.
No, because I feel like if someone's listening and they're like, ooh, a bit torture-y. It's not like, the whole show is not like Saw or Hostel or one of those. There are some, like, it's a pretty intense scene, but...
Christian's being a massive wuss.
No, it's really intense. I had to look away. I couldn't look at the screen, but... It's particularly as the show goes on, that kind of those, and it's not like all about that, but these kind of scenes are actually integral to the plot and kind of integral to how you feel about the people who are inflicting them. Because I feel like the fact that someone is willing to do that says an awful lot about both what kind of people they are and how much they care about what
I love when Marsh is on from Toronto, because she feels like she has to justify things, you know, in a kind of a lefty communist way. She wants to make sure that people know that something isn't just gratuitous.
No, but also particularly with this, because I genuinely think it's the best TV show I've ever seen in my entire life.
Look, no matter how much you defend it, Marcia, a torture scene is in there because it makes bloody great TV, because it's torture.
But it does make sense to the...
I
feel like in a way that with a Game of Thrones, they often have stuff that's torture. Not because it's like integral to the plot, but because
because it's shocking. I completely agree with you, Marsha. Yeah.
There's something different with this. It's because, and it's even at the start, in the first scene of the show, where they kill everybody in the room. It's this callous coldness of it as well. Kind of just. That's what gets them. That's what affected me most, I think.
Yeah, yeah. So I won't be carrying on watching it.
No, hell! Tell me more. Tell me more.
Number one, I have to pay for it.
Why?
Because I pay for my entertainment.
But it's on Channel 4.
It's not on demand anymore. It's gone.
Yes, it is. I've just watched it.
Are you joking? I searched on demand and I couldn't. It wasn't there.
I've literally just watched the last 20 minutes of the before. Maybe, I came.
Could this be an Irish thing? An Irish license or something?
No, because he's in Belfast. That's in the UK. Belfast.
My God! Seriously, look. Do you know what the UK is?
I thought you were out on the. I thought you were where you did your pilot for. Your Game of Thrones thing. I thought you were like out on the coast, weaving baskets and things.
Can I just say I'm looking at the All Four app now, and I can see all of Series One of Utopia.
Get the fuck in the sea, Matt, or whatever.
I can even download it. Later.
Fucking.
What did you check? Did you check on your TV?
Yeah.
On the
Sky. Ah, right.
That's different. I've noticed this with things. On you do it on TV, you can sometimes not find stuff that's online. You've got to check for things. Yeah.
Oh, Sky make you think that they've got it all. Evil Rupert Murdoch, eh, Marsh?
Evil.
Knew you'd like that one.
Fuck the sky.
Honestly, you run a podcast about box sets and you don't know how to find a box set.
I just thought that it was all on there.
I feel quite superior right now.
Oh, why do I not like it? Okay, I don't like it because British actors annoy me.
Ooh.
Do you mean they annoy you in British TV shows? Because you probably watch quite a lot of British actors in your American shows.
Matt, are you a British actor, Matt?
Absolutely not.
Yes, you are. Point proven. Right?
But they're so good in Utopia. Mm. The acting is so good.
You know, like, I've been watching bits of Louis and I've been watching Master of None recently. Mm. And, you know, there's this ownership that people have when they're performing something that they've written, and I've really grown to love it. Yeah. And I think maybe the American accent does do a big thing for it, because Andrew Lincoln, I really enjoy him, Walking Dead and stuff. And we've discussed
Idris Elba.
We've discussed it before, but Idris Elba as well. And
I think you're right, Hal, because I think there is a tone and a style within British television that actors adopt, which I find annoying as well. And I remember thinking that when I did watch a little bit of Utopia, that 10 minutes that I watched. That's why I didn't carry on watching.
Yeah, it reminds me of, if anyone remembers from primary school, there were these things like the Friday film.
Friday film special.
Yeah, with very sort of sincere acting.
It's not like that. It's so good. I think that's your filter.
Have you ever seen Orphan Black?
Yes, thank you.
This is what that show felt like, I think. 100%.
I was trying to remember the name of it, and I even wrote down what British box set was it that Sarah kind of wanted to carry on, and I was like, oh, I can't be asked. And do you know what I think it is? This is me, the director, speaking now. I think that a lot of British stuff is less funded than American stuff. There is less money involved. Mm-hmm. And I wonder whether part of that is the attention given to the delivery of the script, the delivery of the lines, the rehearsal of the lines, the ownership of the parts and the characters. And
but how can you say this when you've only watched one episode?
Because I'm a director, and it genuinely screeches to me when someone delivers a line and I recognise that that line is just delivered in the wrong way, the stress is in the wrong place of the line. It really fucks me off and it takes me out of it. Whereas in those big American things where they probably have had 5 days to do the same scene, there seems much more gravitas. So yes, it's a very personal thing. This is like, let's say that Jamie was an expert chef. And he's tasting food. I'm aware that I'm possibly being a bit of a snob, so it might be a personal thing. But I would like
to know what Christian thinks of it.
All right.
Oh, I
The torture scene aside,
I thought, I don't know. There was I have to agree with Hal about the acting. I don't think the acting is great in it. I think it's all just a little bit stilted. But I saw enough to make me want to watch the next few episodes to see where it goes.
So what else it might be, Christian? It might not be my thing about directing and stuff. It might actually just be that this is such a heightened thing, Marsh. It's a conspiracy theory thing. I pretty much hate anything that's conspiracy theory because most conspiracy theories are bullshit.
Usually, so do I.
but they also it doesn't suit the British personality. So being like, I think someone's coming to get us. I read this thing online and somebody said that there's this world that controls us that's above our world, that's a different world, and you don't understand it yet. There's something about American personality that suits, because America's so ridiculous. We would be more likely to sit there and go, some pillock wrote something online that there's this world that controls us. Should we kill him?
But listen, this is why I'm desperate for you to continue, because I think I agree with you. And generally, when I tell people about Utopia, I don't say it's about conspiracy theory, because that's what my friend said to me before I watched it. And I was like, oh, bore me later. Like, I don't want to watch something about conspiracy theory. And I think I probably felt the same as you in the first episode of being like, oh, whatever, all these people suspicious. I wouldn't be like that. But once it starts going on and the plot is so, oh, God, it's so well done. There's something in almost every single episode that makes you go, what? Like, that you're totally not expecting to happen. And the way that it works in with the conspiracy theory stuff is you're very convinced both by what is happening and by people's responses to it. And I think maybe with the actors, you need to get to know them a little bit better. Maybe that's it, because it's one of those things that you end up loving them. And I've done that before with TV shows. I remember the first time I saw 30 Rock or The American Office and being with friends who were dying laughing at things that were being said. And I was like, this just isn't that good. And then when I fell in love with the characters and got to know them, I was like, oh my God, that's brilliant. And the comic timing is brilliant. And the acting is so brilliant.
We've said many times, and I agree, and it's a pilot as well. And I'm probably being too harsh on them for what are their first scenes, really.
But did you not also... Hang on, wait. But what does Christian think? Because I want to ask you, like, specific questions. But what does Christian think of it?
I also... answer me one thing, because I've been hurt before. When you were saying about, there's something fantastic happens in each episode, and you go, what? And that's happened with me a lot, like with Lost.
Now, oh God, no! It's not like Lost. No, no, it's not.
Does remind me of Lost already.
What are you going to say? What are you going to say?
Not finished yet. Right. What the problem with Lost is, of course, because I lost a huge amount of my life to that, and then I'm scarred from the ending of Lost.
I feel pain, Christian.
Tell me now. Utopia was cancelled. Was there an ending?
Yeah, so here's the thing that's brilliant about Utopia. First of all, if there's things that are unexpected, it's not like Lost where they're just like, oh, let's just throw in a... Like, they're not just throwing things in for the sake of it. It's stuff that totally works and that makes you kind of go, oh, that makes so much sense! And then the other thing is it was cancelled after two series and you can see how they could have made a fucking brilliant third series, but they wrap up everything tidily enough. Like, one of the other shows that I loved was The Hour, which got cancelled after two series. And The Hour is so good that I still recommend it to people, but it leaves you on a total heartbreak. Like, it leaves you on a total cliffhanger that you're never going to find out what happens. Okay. And Utopia, I feel like, in all the loose ends that you need to be tied up, get tied up. You just see how they could have done something amazing with it.
I'm sold. I'm going to watch it then.
Yes.
Oh, that's good. Okay. Well, Christian, you can then tell me whether it's Karen. Because it's not that I don't want to believe, Marcia, and you've almost convinced me. It's just that you seem to be a big fan of a lot of shows that have been cancelled.
but often
haven't watched Mad Men and The West Wing.
But I'm fans of shows often that have been cancelled because they're very expensive. Like, The Hour was a period drama.
Oh, God, that was a piece of shit.
The Hour was terrible.
Awful. Wasn't The Hour the one that was terrible. Trying to emulate Mad Men but in Britain?
It was set in the 50s.
It had that oeuvre about
boring.
It.
The characters were boring.
Again, Marcia, it's like, it's understandable that you enjoyed it, but it was the BBC watched Mad Men and went, shit, we need something like that.
Yeah, maybe they did, but I thought it was smart.
Then it turned into a fucking crap spy thriller. It was
The second series, was not so good, but the first series I thought was just perfection.
The second series.
It's so difficult to know, Jamie. We've got like Matt who hates everything and Marcia who loves everything. It's so difficult to know which one to attach yourself to.
I don't hate everything.
Jamie, do you feel like you're going to sway one way or the other on this? Are you going to watch Utopia?
I feel a bit sorry for Marcia here. She's fighting a bit of a tough battle, to be honest. But I feel your enthusiasm has won me round to give one episode, or maybe even two episodes, possibly even four episodes a go.
Yay!
But I have to say, your judgment sometimes worries me. That's my only...
Can I tell you the biggest compliment I can give you on Utopia is that I'm envious of you all for not having watched it, because I wish that I could wipe my brain and go back and watch it again for the first time.
That is a big compliment.
Oh, that's like West Wing with me.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like Marcia, Star Wars for me.
How are you doing with West Wing? I watched it the other day. It's on TV a lot during the day on More 4 at the moment. And I'd think of you every time.
I wish I could watch it during the day. I'd love that.
Yeah, I don't have a life. And I just desperately wish that you carry on with it and persevere, because it gets...
I'm still where I was, where it's just, I see that it's brilliant, but for me, when I'm watching telly by myself, it's my super relaxo time.
No.
And so I'm too ADD, but it's too challenging for my ADD.
No.
Because I've got to
listen
stay...
to this.
Because she has to get up and pee every 30 seconds.
Get a fucking tray or whatever they are, a kidney dish.
Yeah, kidney dish and just PNS.
How many episodes, Marcia?
I watched five.
Please,
I gave
keep
it
going.
Like a really good run.
Oh, keep going, Marcia.
Please
that
keep
is quite
going.
A good run, but do just, keep going. The first series is the worst.
There is one reason why you should keep going, and that is that I will take your opinion on other things so much more.
So much
more seriously.
Yeah.
And the same with Mad Men. I decided the other night, just to, because we've talked about it so much now and it's been so many years, I downloaded episode one and just watched episode one, and I see again why it's so difficult for everyone. Everyone bangs on about how Walter White was the first character that really tested an audience's patience. And actually, that first episode of Mad Men, Don Draper. Like the biggest sexist asshole. Like, there's very little to hang on to.
Mad Men is the hardest one to get into. It took me about six or seven, I'd say.
And yet, it's just the finest, classiest thing, because when you've watched it and you go back, you like it even more, because you go,
What was I worried about?
This is what it's about. It is about the fact the writer is going, look at this fucking world that existed where black people, women, people smoked in the thing, you know, everyone was cruel to each other. This existed. How did America get from there to where it is now? So interesting and brilliant. So, Marsha, if you carry on with West Wing and Mad Men, I will carry on with Utopia. That is a deal.
Okay. Oh, man. I have to say, of all the different shows, of all the big shows I haven't watched, Mad Men's the one that appeals the most.
That's going to be the one you're going to find hardest with ADD.
Yeah.
No, oh, really?
Well, yeah, I'm surprised that you say that about West Wing, because there's so much fucking going on.
It's because it's just constant dialogue. And I have to keep... My mind just drifts off a lot. And so I have to keep... constantly, like, I just get worn down by constantly having to keep on top of things. And when I watch TV with other people, that's like that. Like when I watched The Wire, I watched it with someone else, and every 20 minutes I'd hit pause and be like, okay, what's happening?
But yeah, but
I
think you're just getting West Wing wrong. I think you should put it on in the background, just play on, because it's the thing with West Wing is that they are really short bursts. But the pace does begin to change with time, and the characters are the most important thing.
I just need some blank space. But let me talk in blank space. I want to ask you both something about Utopia. Did you not think, and I can't remember how much this comes through in the first episode, but one of the things that knocked me sideways about Utopia was how beautifully it's shot, that it's shot in widescreen.
No, not...
Just look like a wanky commissioned London project. That gets
Marsha, it's awful.
We need a Welsh girl. We need
a sync drama, like a Mike Lee film.
Christian, I'd be really pissed off because Irish was the only accent that wasn't represented or minority that wasn't represented. I mean, even Wales.
Michael Smiley was in. He's Northern Irish.
Yeah, exactly.
That's true. I just thought it just reminded me of Lost. I was just like, oh, it's giving me little bits. And
at the end of
the episode, something happens.
Do you four episodes? I did five for West Wing. You have to do me four. Utopia.
Okay, we'll do four.
No, we'll do it.
I might watch a bit of Utopia. I'm intrigued.
Okay. The very first scene is on YouTube.
Okay, right. Matt's going
to... Can I make a suggestion?
Yes.
I've had an idea. Because we were talking about stuff that's been cancelled and things like that, have you thought about doing a podcast entirely about shows that have been cancelled?
Oh,
great idea.
Did anyone see Luck?
Nope.
Oh, with Dustin Hoffman.
Oh, my God, I was so gutted that that show got cancelled. Watch the first episode.
Is, Christian, and this would be the whole episode. Someone goes, did anyone watch Two Ducks in a Pond? And everyone goes, nope. Oh, it was brilliant.
This was a big one, and it got cancelled because of, you know, animals dying, which is a horrible thing. But if you
watch horses,
it was about horse racing. And if you watch the first episode, there is this shot of a trainer taking a horse around a track, and Nick Nolte's watching it, and some of these other characters, and it is mesmerizing. There's this sort of 30-second tracking shot of this horse, and I've never seen anything like it, and it's got this kind of swell of music. It's absolutely beautiful, really worth watching just the first episode.
Great.
Okay. Yeah. I'm gonna give that a go.
All right, then.
We should do a cancelled special. The cancelled special.
What's it? 60 on the Sunset Strip thing. That was brilliant.
Oh, that was good. That was terrible.
No, it wasn't. It was good.
I loved it.
It was a lot better than Newsroom, which carried on for three series.
The biggest travesty.
I like Newsroom as well.
Yeah.
That was awful.
Newsroom. I like the Newsroom.
Oh, come on.
I didn't really like it, but I couldn't help myself.
The scene in Newsroom where they use the Coldplay song "Fix You" and they're all running around the office like they're goddamn firefighters. Yeah. Heroically saving the day, and it just sent me. I couldn't watch it.
Right. It is disgusting.
I'll give you that image. It's not good. All right.
This is an interesting thing actually about Aaron Sorkin in general. Is the use of music in his TV shows is diabolically awful.
Oh my god.
The West Wing soundtrack is a war crime.
Oh my god.
Nonsense. You're
it should be tried in The Hague.
Awful. Matt is just. I'm waiting for a positive view from Matt on anything, and it's
I love The West Wing. And I just waxed lyrical about Luck, so fuck you.
None of us know that Luck actually exists. None of us know that. Matt had some interesting points on last week's podcast and they got cut out for various reasons. And we've reached the end of this podcast, but I do want to get Matt to give us his opinions. We've been talking about whodunits. I have been saying I don't like whodunits. They really piss me off. I've just finished Bloodline, Jamie. Absolutely loved it.
Brilliant.
But the Bloodline annoyed me for the same reason as a whodunit, because it does begin with a death. And the question is, why done it? Isn't it?
Yeah.
And that still annoyed me. I could have done without that.
Some powerhouse performances.
Yeah, really nice, really good stuff.
Unbelievable performance.
Has that got Carl Chandler in it?
Yes. Yeah. And he's not. He's a good actor. If you've watched Friday Night Lights.
Speaking of Carl Chandler, yes, let's do a Friday Night Lights episode.
Let's do that next week. Who wants to watch the first episode of Friday Night Lights?
Everyone sane.
Yeah, I'll give it a go. I think I've watched it before, but I think I'll give it a go.
Great. Great.
Yeah, give it
prepare
a go.
Prepare yourself for the theme tune. Just Marsh, prepare yourself.
Marsh is staying quiet. I think you should watch it, Marsh. I think you should try that one.
It might be. That's another one, actually, that kind of appeals to me.
Yeah. But this...
Worth it just so you understand the parody sketch that Amy Schumer did of it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing. Matt, what were your points on the that you made last week?
Well, because you're talking about the thing you don't like about whodunits is that you know exactly what's going to happen from the start of it. Yeah, someone does a thing and you have to find out who it is, and then you find out, and that's it.
Yes.
Well, I was saying that Seven was the best example of a whodunit because finding out isn't the end of the film.
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
And the crime plays out. Even up to that final moment, because you find out who done it 30 minutes before the end.
That's true. And he
still has to finish it off.
Yeah, it's still procedural, but it's so the Seven Deadly Sins side of it. The structure becomes more than just whodunit. So
I agree that's quite good.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's my favourite thriller that I've ever seen.
And what were your other points?
I said that rom-coms were similar to whodunits.
Yes, and I disagreed. You know, you're wrong. There's a structure we understand in rom-coms, but it's not predetermined. It doesn't. If a rom-com was to begin with a scene of a wedding, and then
Jesus
we don't,
Christ, what is Jamie?
What
doing?
Is that? Is that you, Jamie?
Oh, stop me, man!
Sorry, that might be me. I'm sorry. I would disagree. I would say almost every rom-com, although it doesn't begin with them getting together, and I love it's a genre I love. Mm-hmm. But the ones that I love the best are the ones like Definitely Maybe, where you actually don't know who's going to get together at the end. But I would say like 98% of rom-coms, you know who's going to get together at the end, even if it's not explicit.
Yeah.
It's just very,
but it's
very
not yes. as definite as A Dead Body. We're talking about general genres there, whereas A Dead Body, Who Killed This Body, is just procedural. And,
fair enough.
And that isn't...
Well, the other two points I had were that the Friday Night Lights theme is amazing and that Captain Holt is the best character in Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and we've kind of already touched on those, so I feel like I've been...
You're absolutely right. We need to do Friday Night Lights, and we need to do a special episode on theme tunes. What we need to do is create a WhatsApp group between all of us, and then we can actually plan these episodes.
That's a good idea.
Without 15 separate email trains going on. But by the way, Jamie is never part of. Jamie, I protect you from this shit.
Thanks,
I protect
dude.
You from
we could do a Facebooky thing. Is everybody on Facebook?
No, fuck that.
Somebody email. We've got to do Deadwood as well. We've got to do Deadwood.
I'm trying
We've
to persuade to. The wife to watch Deadwood, and she won't. She just says it's like it's just rest and stuff. And
no idea.
Watching.
Text
her,
Jamie.
Really text
that's
her.
Kind of the way I think about it as well. But I might give it a go. I'll give it a go.
It looks like shit. It really does.
Oh, that's it. I thought you'd watched it, Matt.
No, I haven't.
I think he's just
no.
playing to type now. Let's go. Well done, everybody. So next week, what's next week? What should we do?
Let's do Friday Night Lights then. Can we get you back on, Christian, to do Friday Night Lights?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's do Friday Night Lights next week. Thank you, everyone.
I'm looking forward to it.
Marsha, well done. You have slightly persuaded me, and I will try.
Yay!
And Matthew, Christian, well done. As usual, cheerful and grumpy. See you next week.
Thanks, guys.